Welcome to AMP. My name is Richard Conway, and this is the platform for age group multisport athletes to showcase their journeys. Welcome along to episode 28. And on this episode, we have the third and final part of our conversation with NHS psychiatrist Dr. Pippa Jane. And over the last two episodes, Pippa's been discussing all things mental health in athletes. And in our third and final part, Pippa discusses REDS, and also the effects of alcohol upon athletes. I really enjoyed that. I've enjoyed the whole conversation. I've learnt a lot, and I know you guys have too, because I've been getting quite a lot of feedback from you, so thank you for your feedback, and I'm glad that you've enjoyed it. And I'd just like to say a big, big thank you once again to Pippa for taking the time out and coming on the podcast and sharing her knowledge. And our main event features Stuart Fisher, who owns and runs Endurance Peaks, and he is a brand new age grouper, having just qualified last year for Romania, the Sprint Duathlon in Târgu Mureș, which is held in July this year. Hopefully, all being well, fingers crossed. So Stuart talks about his journey from childhood into multi-sport, and then we go on and discuss about his Endurance Peak business, where he basically has a sports lab, and he carries out physiological measurement testing such as VO2 max and lactate threshold and RMR. And really enjoyed that with Stuart. Really nice guy. So that's all coming up. So what we've been doing over the last couple of weeks, well, we're back in the pool in earnest, been getting about three swims in a week, which is good, getting a feel for the water again. And did a 400 meter time trial, and I wasn't too upset with the time. It's better than I thought I was going to be. And just today I've just done a 30 minute time trial. We've got the standard triathlon in Leeds in June, beginning of June, so not long now. So I wanted to make sure that I could do 1500 metres in one go, because it's been a while, as you can all appreciate, and managed to do that. So I was, again, reasonably happy with the time, not too far away from where I have been in the past. So we just have to keep building and keep getting in the water, and eventually get back into open water as well, hopefully when it warms up a little bit. But the way the weather's going at the moment, it doesn't seem to be going in that direction. So, but yeah, I've also been enjoying some track work on a Saturday with my club, WBC, Wolves Breakfast Club. So we've been doing some 400 repeats, 10 of them actually, with reduced rest each week. So that's been good. Been keeping up the hill sessions, been keeping up the brick sessions and the hit sessions on Zwift. So a mixed bag, and been following the Athletica AI program. That's been good. It claims to be the most intelligent training platform ever built. So let's see if it works and let's see if it helps. But a big thank you to them for making me an ambassador. And least I can do is just plug it on this podcast and keep you up to date. And you can find them on Instagram at Athletica AI. They're often putting posts on there, and I'll put posts on my personal Instagram as well. So yeah, have a look at it and see what you think. If you're not coached like me, I was coached, it might be couple of the past guests have been racing over the last couple of weeks. David Pearson and Jamie Price were at Ashridge doing the standard duathlon, which was a qualifier. And David, recovering from injury, finished in the top 10, and I think he was quite pleased with that. So well done, David. And Jamie, his form's getting better and better, and he finished second overall. So well done, Jamie. You're on fire at the moment, mate. Keep it going. Another qualification in the bag. If you want to hear more of the age group news, head over to Instagram, where you'll find all the race results on age group_news. And that's produced by David Pearson and Karina Kaufman, who have both been guests on the show. But it's great information. So if you don't follow them already, sign up and find out all about age group. And that's about it for now. So we shall crack on. And coming up first, as I said, is Dr. Pippa Jane. And it's our third and final part. And hope you enjoy. And I'll see you on the other side.
So REDS, or relative energy deficiency in sport, is something that it used to be called the female athlete triad. Mm. And that described it described a cluster of things. It described when you basically keep yourself, your energy availability very low. So you keep yourself in energy deficit. Mm-hmm. And in women, that generally affected their menstrual cycle. So periods can get irregular or they can stop. And that affects your estrogen production. And estrogen is really, really important for bone density. So if you're not producing enough estrogen, your bone density can quite easily reduce. So that's why sort of postmenopausal women have to be quite careful, and quite often they'll take calcium or vitamin D supplements to prevent that. It's now called relative energy deficiency in sport, which is good because it takes into account lots of other systems in the body, and it applies to men as well. Mm. So it happens when your energy availability is consistently low. So your energy availability is what's left available to your body after you've done all your exercise. Okay. So it's when your energy intake is always lower than your energy expenditure. So you're basically just not eating enough the level of activity that you're doing. And it's affected by your fat-free mass as well. So your fat-free mass is what it says on the tin, basically. It's your total body weight divided by total body weight minus what your fat mass is, which you can get from sort of standing on fancy scales and things. So to avoid being energy deficient, sort of to stay, so staying healthy, you should be eating around 45 calories per kilogram of fat-free mass per day. So that will be protective against getting REDS. Mm. If you're eating less than 30 calories per kilogram of fat-free mass per day, that's when you put yourself at risk of getting REDS. So some of the things to look out for. So generally, you know, if you're you feel ill if you're energy deficient, don't you? Like if you do a hard training session and you haven't fueled your body enough, I don't know about you, Richard, but I can tell straight away. I feel ill. I just really don't feel well at the end of it. So if you're feeling consistently like that, then that's when your alarm bells should be ringing. So generally, you're feeling it's quite similar to what you get when you're with overtraining syndrome. So you'll get quite fatigued. So you feel tired, like a lot of the time. That can be just within training sessions or just generally feeling really exhausted. Obviously, if you're energy deficient, then the likelihood is you're probably going to be losing a bit of weight. So just keep an eye on what's going on with the scales. You can get cold extremities, so cold hands and feet, dry skin, you can lose some hair. You might find that if you get injured, your healing time might increase. So it might take longer to rehabilitate yourself. And that even applies to sort of delayed onset muscle soreness as well. So everybody gets a bit, you know, muscle sore after a hard training session. But if that is taking longer to go away, then that could be a sign that something isn't quite right. You can also feel low in mood. And as I said before, you know, with women's periods can become irregular or they can even stop altogether. Mm. So, and it can, those things altogether can have quite serious complications. So obviously if you're in women particularly, if you get your increased fracture risk because of the estrogen production, but men can be at increased fracture risk as well if they're not fueling their bodies with what they need. So coaches are now for most clubs are saying if anybody gets any type of stress fracture, they should be thinking about Reds and worrying about it and wondering, you know, whether or not the athlete is getting the energy that they need.
Mm.
You can get iron deficiency anemia. So if you're not eating enough, then, you know, and yeah, you can become anemic, and that can lead to the tiredness, fatigue, and reduced performance. It affects your immune system. So you might find that you get coughs and colds a bit more frequently. A really important one is that you can get heart arrhythmias as well. So if you're not taking in the essential salts that your body needs to function, so the most important ones from the top of my head are, say, sodium and potassium. Mm-hmm. So they are super important for the function of your nervous system. They're needed for the electrical conduction in your nervous system. And that particularly affects your heart and your heart rhythm. So if you're depleted in either of those two things, and then you add on a hard training session or a race to that, you're putting yourself in a pretty dangerous situation there. So yeah, that's super important. And again, yeah, the effects on mood, which I've mentioned before, you can sort of develop sort of longer term depression and anxiety if it goes on for too long. So it's really important to recognize it quickly and get it sorted quickly. And the good news is that it can take a while to recover from it, but it is definitely treatable. And the way to do it is really, really simple. And that is just to increase your energy availability on a daily basis. So that means that you're eating a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
maybe pulling back a little bit on the exercise, so on the training, so making it less frequent, less intense, or taking a break altogether, which is absolutely fine. You know, it does take a while to recover from this.
Yeah.
And to the other way as well is to reduce your fat free mass. So in other words, just gain a little bit of weight, which for some triathletes might sound like an absolute disaster, but it's not. You know, again, think about the bigger picture on the longevity of your athletic career.
Yeah.
It's going to be beneficial in the long term. And you know, importantly, if you're worried about it, get help. Talk to your GP, talk to a sports dietitian, talk to your coaches, reach out and get help for it. And be patient with yourself as well, because it can take quite a while to recover from.
Lots to think about there, isn't there?
Think about, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But, you know, but it's important to just be aware of the signs and symptoms so that, you know, and keep checking in with yourself every now and again. Make sure that things aren't going in the wrong direction. Sorry, especially if you are trying to lose weight for a race as well, yeah. It's important to do that in a healthy way.
Yeah.
So make sure you're not too calorie deficient.
The final one then, will that be alcohol?
Yes.
Right.
So yeah, problems with alcohol and other drugs are surprisingly common among athletes, especially sort of amateur athletes, because the opportunities for abusing drugs are a bit more present, because you're not going to get drug tested for amateur races. I don't know what it is and what it's like with age group.
you can do, yeah. Yeah. They've started to bring it in. I can't remember which race I was in, I can't remember what nationality he was, but they tested them, and you can just get pulled over, and they tested them, and I think I want to say a Spanish athlete, but I'd just be guessing now that they found that he'd been taking something, and it's happened. It happens, and you think, I can't comprehend it, to be honest. You know, we're doing this for fun, and it's, you know, one, if it gets to that level and gets to, you're not doing it for the right reasons.
I completely agree.
So
yeah, completely.
Yeah, but it does happen, and they are tested.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's surprisingly common. Alcohol really is quite a big problem, especially sort of in sort of university sports. So if anybody's sort of competing sort of university level triathlon, yeah, it can definitely be an issue there. And I think as well as you start to put a bit more pressure on yourself to perform well and the stress is there, that could sort of lead to problems with sleep, and people tend to, then the temptation is to self-medicate with drinking. But it does have so many detrimental effects, and you know, those can be acute, they can be short term and long term. So more of the short term effects are that, well, everybody feels rubbish with a hangover. But if you try to train or race on a hangover, I mean, the main effect is that your body is very dehydrated, and that reduces your aerobic capacity by about 10%, which is massive. So you're definitely going to be underperforming when you've got a hangover. Also, if your liver has been very, very busy metabolizing alcohol for the hours before a race or within 24 hours of a race, it means that it's distracted from regulating your body temperature. So research shows that athletes who have had any sort of alcohol in the 24 hours before a race, their body temperature is slightly higher. Again, that reduces their performance. So it definitely has detrimental performance effects. So I would certainly be avoiding it in the 24 hours before racing. But obviously the long-term effects are massive. So, you know, it can have an effect on your mood. Lots of people who drink regularly have a depressed mood because alcohol is a depressant. And that is quite difficult to get people to understand. It's surprisingly difficult.
Yeah.
You know, because
trying to get your head around that, what you've just said, because it makes you feel better when you drink.
Exactly.
So it's sort of counterproductive.
Absolutely. So
is there a line then, the amount that you drink, that tips you over that from being content and happy and, you know, going over to not feeling great and feeling bad about yourself? Or is it just the people deal with it differently? Is it that?
I think that's always going to be the case. I think that, you know, the government guidelines are there for a reason. So, you know, we shouldn't really be drinking more than 14 units a week. And that shouldn't be just in one go. That needs to be spread out through the week. And you need to have at least two free alcohol-free days per week as well. And generally, if you stick to that, that will help to maintain your mental and your physical health, for sure. Mm. But there are things to watch out for with any sort of addiction, really, is if you're becoming tolerant to it. So if you're finding that, you know, that glass of wine in the evenings, that one glass isn't really helping you relax anymore, you need two or three, and it's sort of increasing dangerously, then that's what we call tolerance. It's your body getting used to it, and you need more to get the same effect. So that's one red flag. The others could be if you're prioritizing alcohol over other things. So for example, I don't know, you've agreed to go and pick up a friend somewhere, but the urge to have a drink sort of was a bit too strong and you decided to have that glass of wine and cancel going to pick up your friend from somewhere. So, you know, making alcohol a priority over other things, that's another danger sign. If you've tried to quit, but you haven't been able to do it, so you've tried to have a few alcohol-free days, but I found it too difficult, that's a red flag. Definitely, that's sort of, you know, that's a warning sign that things might be going in the wrong direction for you. I think those are the main things. And if you start to get withdrawal symptoms, that's quite a big one. So withdrawal symptoms being sort of feeling shaky, feeling sweaty. Some people can even get hallucinations as well. Right. So quite most commonly it's insects or small animals running over the floor.
Right.
That's when it's quite severe. So, but if you just think of having a bad hangover, that's what withdrawal feels like. So if you're getting that in the mornings and feeling the need to have a drink or what we call an eye opener in the mornings to get rid of that, that's a pretty good sign that there is something wrong.
Yeah.
So just bear these things in mind. I think the tolerance one is the one that tends to run away with people quickly. Yeah.
So in your experience, that's general how people deal with it. What about specifically athletes? Is it released from training or after a competition or?
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, I think that feeling is fine to a certain extent. I mean, you know, you finish a mass race and you want to relax with a beer. I think that is just completely normal. There are absolutely no health benefits of doing that whatsoever. but it does help you relax. Fair enough. But if you're doing that after every training session, then it's an issue.
But it's definitely an issue. Would athletes do that?
I think some do. I think it's. Yeah. Again, it's something that isn't really talked about very much. It's important to make people aware of it, that, you know, it does happen. And if you are doing that, then you 100% aren't alone doing that. It's more common than you think it is. And there's loads of help out there if you think you have a problem with alcohol.
I mean, I can get that in student, because that's the sort of culture, isn't it? That's their culture. But for anybody who are trying to improve themselves by fitness, it's sort of counterproductive, isn't it?
It is counterproductive, yeah. Yeah, but again, it occurs way more commonly than you'd think it would. But again, with alcohol, if you're worried and you think you might have a problem, again, the GP is a great place to go. The NHS website has lots and lots of support for reducing your alcohol intake. And it's even got like a unit calculator there as well. So you can sort of keep track of what you're putting in. And quite a good way of doing it is to have a unit budget over a week. So like give yourself 14 units in the week and keep a track of what you're drinking. And then, you know, it just helps you to spread it out across the week, really, and drink in a more healthy fashion. And the AA as well is great. People get, you know, really great results from that.
And can I ask, that's an interesting thing you've just said there about spreading it out over the week. Why is that better than like having a drink every night or whatever, but having the same amount over a weekend? Why? What's the difference? What's the benefits of that?
Of keeping it steady?
Yeah. And well, say you had, I don't know, you're still within the government guidelines of what they suggest, but you have it on a Saturday night, Sunday night, instead of like throughout the week. Is there any health benefits to that? Obviously the best benefit is not to drink at all, isn't it? But
absolutely. I mean, the problem with binge drinking is that you're overloading your liver, basically. Right. So your liver can only metabolize at a particular rate. So, you know, if you're having sort of two units of alcohol a night, then your liver can cope with that fairly comfortably. But if you're giving it 7, 10, 14 units at once, that's when it's going to struggle.
Thank you, Pippa, once again for the Mental Health in Sport series that you've put together. And just to recap, on the other two episodes, we've looked at depression, anxiety, injuries, alcohol, exercise addiction, dependence, and eating disorders. So if you haven't heard the other ones, go back to the previous two episodes and find out about all those topics. So once again, Pippa, thank you ever so much for your time. Right, moving on to our main event. Hope you enjoy this, and we'll see you on the other side. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, Rich.
Thank you for coming on and welcome along to AMP. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Yeah, nice to meet you.
Yeah, and you, mate. Yeah. Thanks for getting in touch and wanting to come on.
It's all right. It's my first taste and experience, so I'm excited.
Yeah, if you could just give us a little bit of insight into your background growing up as a kid and where you grew up and where you are now, basically.
Okay, so my name's Stuart Fisher. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited, first podcast, so chuffed to bits. So yeah, as a kid I was very sporty, as I imagine a lot of your previous podcasters have been as well. So grew up doing all the usual sports that you do through school: football, cricket. Didn't really play to any particular sort of standard. The cricket, I got to sort of county level as a junior, so that was always my sort of main sport, and then I used football to sort of keep fit. And did that pretty much all the way through primary school, high school, and then it was probably around the sort of university time when I started to work as well as study, and my Saturdays and Sundays were becoming a little bit more sort of time precious. I met my now wife, and so cricket became a little bit of a difficult sport to try and keep up, mainly because it's as you know, in the UK, it's an all day event, either on a Saturday or Sunday as well. And I felt like I was playing a sport, but actually getting more unfit due to the time that you sort of stood around, and then the amazing teas that you get at break and stuff like that. So I then started dabbling a little bit into running, just to keep fit. And that sort of ended itself a little bit better in terms of time. So I was able to fit it in, which is the beauty of running. You stick your trainers on, you get out the door, and you can go for however far you want, and you can get pretty much everything you need within an hour. And that's how my sort of my transition through school started, and then into endurance sports. And then from that, I sort of seeked out a local triathlon club, which started to sort of emerge at the same time as Brownlees were breaking out onto the scene, and triathlon was really starting to have a bit of a boom. And so I found what is Newcastle Triathlon Club, which is the Newcastle Under Lyme Triathlon Club, which was ran by two really lovely people and successful coaches in their own right, and athletes, Ken Matheson and Julia Matheson. Julia particularly has gone on and won events from marathon to long course triathlon duathlon, and she went on to become my coach from there. And then it was a case of triathlon, dipping my toe into triathlon, and that's where we sort of went from. So that's took me up to sort of around the mid sort of 2000s. And then it sort of swapped and changed from there a little bit. So
So how did you come to triathlon in the first place? What drew you to it?
When I joined the triathlon club, like I said, which was around the sort of Brownlee introductory era, I then joined Newcastle Tri Club, and then sort of went under the wings of the triathlon club and Julia herself. And then I started to learn more about endurance sports in general. But I'd always had a favouring towards running. I've never come from a swimming background. It was never something we really did as kids. And then the cycling's always been a bit of a difficulty in terms of time, as you know, and as your listeners will know, it's difficult just to sort of get the time on the bike, these long rides and so on. So I tried at the triathlon, as in the three disciplines of swim, bike and run. And I did a few events. I did an Olympic, a few Olympic sprints, did a half Ironman. But it was when I did a qualifier, one of the Llandudno qualifiers, a good few years back now. And when I looked at my splits, I was way, way off on the swim. And that was after putting in a good sort of 18 months to 2 years of sort of regular swimming. And I just thought, I'm not going to be able to bridge the gap. So I pretty much then came away from triathlon, if I'm honest. Kept the biking up as a bit of cross training, but invested more in the running. And I joined City of Stoke, who I'm still with now, a great club, City of Stoke AC. I do a little bit of assistance coaching for them as well. And then that's where I really started to sort of push on a little bit more with the running, and sort of got my PBs down to a little bit more respectable times. And then, I've kept up the cycling just as more cross training, as when you get an injury from running, what do you do? Jump on the bike. When it's sunny, what do you do? Jump on the bike. All the usual runner's traits. And then how that transitioned into getting back into multi-sport was just by chance, really. Literally over the last year, where with my business Endurance Peak, one of my customers came in, Amanda Young, who some of your listeners will know. She's represented GB age group for a good few years and podiumed at Duathlon. She came in for some physiological testing, so VO2 max lactate testing. We were talking and she said, "What are your plans now?" And said, "Well, I'm just trying to get back into running again after another injury." And she said, "Have you ever thought about duathlon?" And I said, "Well, I'd obviously done triathlon, but never done the actual duathlon event." And she said, "Well, I know what you're from your running times and so on. You do all right at the sprint duathlon." And I said, "Yeah, but I don't do much cycling. I don't do hours and hours and so on." She said, "No, honestly, if you can just string a few weeks together on the bike and maintain a bit of your run form, I'm sure you'll do okay, especially with this last year being a little bit, the qualification being a little bit different." She said, "But there's Alton Park Duathlon in a couple of weeks," which was the October one in 2020. And I said, "Oh, I don't know. Anyway, she got home, emailed me all the information. You have to register and fill out the forms and send over your intent to qualify." So I thought, you know what? I've got nothing to lose. I'll go. I have done a bit of cycling over the summer with lockdown. We'll see how it goes. Plus, we've had no events, and I was just desperate to do an event. The registration closed for Alton Park on the Friday, and I'd only just sort of seen it because Amanda had been in on the Thursday. So I emailed him and said, "Look, I didn't even realise the event was on. Will you accept a late entry?" And he said, "Yes." And so I went from the Saturday morning, turned up on the Sunday, raced, and then I got back to the car, thought I'd done okay. Obviously, the cycling was lacking, but the runs I felt went well. Got back in the car, and Amanda had texted me to say, "I think your time is potentially okay to qualify." And I was like, okay.
What distance was that?
That was sprint.
Sprint distance. And where was it? What was the race?
Alton Park,
yeah.
Yeah, so the October one, I think it was the last chance to qualify for the 2022 duathlon, which is due to go in Romania, if it happens. And then, so that was my first duathlon, my first sort of intention to qualify, and by chance, really, and I think with a little bit of luck in terms of the qualification process, enable me to sort of get a lucky slot. So that's really, it's almost done full circle. So
do you have a turbo trainer that you use, or is it all outside biking that you did?
Well, it's always been a bit of a love-hate relationship, if I'm honest. When it's nice, like everyone, I love getting outside on the bike, and I love giving myself a planned session, a sweet spot intervals outside or hills or a few sort of efforts. But I have really started to appreciate the importance of indoor training. And once I'd qualified, that gave me a real sort of goal and to give me structured training. Up until that point, like I'd said, I'd always just cycled just as cross training for running, whereas I started to focus more. And so, as you know, with indoor training, you can fix into a power or an interval set, and there's no sort of deviation away from that. And I don't think you can particularly beat it. But I don't enjoy it as much as going outdoor. So yeah, in answer to your question, I've got a couple of options. Really, I've got an old school turbo trainer. And then I've got a watt bar, which I use for the testing for endurance peak. Yeah.
And do you link it up to any software programs like Zwift or Trainer Road or anything like that?
Oh, yeah.
You're on Zwift.
Yeah, Zwift. I just don't think you can beat it. When I first got into triathlon previously, it was all very much you had the same set sessions as you have now, but it was a case of you'd have to set set your own turbo up, and then you'd write the session down on a piece of paper, and you would fix into a heart rate, or if you were lucky enough, you'd fix into some sort of power. And it would be, unless you could find something good to watch on iPlayer or even Netflix, it was, yeah. I just found it really dull.
Yeah.
And so now Zwift has just opened up this opportunity for cycling throughout the winter. So I honestly, I don't think you should rely on it all year, but I do think it serves a hell of a sort of importance over winter, definitely.
Yeah, I only asked that question because obviously you've got your lab and you've got your watt bike. And
yeah.
I just wondered whether you were a purist and just, you know, relied on doing stuff like that, knowing what you know. So that's quite interesting.
I need distraction.
Your background, who actually likes Zwift as well. So
yeah, no, it's. But I think anything that distracts you away from the pain is always a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. In a tri club now, or did you come out of that?
No, I came out of it, and then I went back into it, and then at the moment I'm coaching myself,
yeah.
I'm still attending the sessions with City of Stoke to get my running sessions in, and I was just finding that I wasn't going to the swimming sessions, the biking. As you know, sometimes when you go out with a big group, it's not necessarily going to your specific session or heart rate or speed or whatever, and sort of coffee shops, and it ends up being a half a day event. So I was finding I was going to less and less of the sessions. So it just became, I thought I'd stick with City of Stoke and then do my own biking myself, really.
And I think you've got to use whatever works for you, haven't you? You know, you can't be too, like you've rightly said about you didn't enjoy the swimming, and so you found something else. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's perfectly the right thing to do. You know, you've got to play to your strengths, as we always say, you know, on this place. I mean, personally myself, I'm a stronger duathlete than I am a triathlete, although I do enjoy both of them. You know, I know my swim's lacking. But I'm persevering, and because I quite enjoy swimming, and with the body getting older as well, it's a relief from actually doing the harder things of running and pounding your legs, and also the riding as well. So it gives you a bit of relief on the body. That's, if you put those in your plan, then it sort of gives that relief a little bit. But that's me, and that's what I enjoy.
100%.
But I've spoke to loads of people who are not from swimming background, and they are penalised in triathlon, and duathlon is a place for them to be and to do well and to be able to qualify like you've done, and it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree.
So any hints and tips that you've got for people who are listening to this, starting off in triathlon or are already in triathlon, or who want to qualify to represent in age group?
I think the first thing is one, you've got to find the enjoyment in it. And like you quite rightly said, for me, I just thought if you want to do multi-sport, you've got to be able to swim. And that actually isn't true now. You've got multiple options. And I think it's finding what you enjoy, whether you're particularly good at it or not. Progress will be made through, one, you enjoying it, and two, being able to get the work done that's required on a weekly basis due to that enjoyment. So I think enjoyment's first thing, and then the other one is finding consistency but finding a consistent approach that works for you. So that's not a case of seeing what the top end are doing and feel that you've got to aspire to meet that and put pressure on yourself, and then maybe be able to do it when you've got a week off work, or be able to string together something which you associate as being what is the optimal, and only doing it for 2 or 3 weeks. I think it's looking at your week realistically and picking out, okay, well, this is when I work. This is my family time. This is my socializing time. Okay, where are the gaps? and where do I want to train and how long can I train, and then divide that up between the disciplines that you've got, and not too much pressure on yourself. And I think if you can do that over a prolonged period, one, you'll enjoy it more, and two, you'll see results which are sustainable long term as well.
Great advice. You know, you need that life balance, don't you? And at the end of the day, we do it for enjoyment, and we do it to make ourselves healthy and our well-being, and that's what we shouldn't lose sight of, because if we do, then we should pack in. So yeah, that's great advice.
Just picking up on that, and I think it's easy. I'm the worst person for it as well, as when you start seeing success, and I don't mean success as in I've achieved anything in particular, I just mean your own personal goals, whether that be to run a 10K under an hour. As soon as you can start seeing improvements, we do have a tendency, or we can have the tendency, to put pressure on ourselves internally to then start hitting times, and it's very easy to lose sight of why you've done it, or why you do it in the first place. And sometimes it needs an injury or lockdown, which we've obviously just been in, to then realise, actually just being able to get out with your trainers on or take your bike out for a 90-minute ride in the fresh air is actually what it's all about. So, yeah, just picking up on what you said then.
Totally agree. Yeah, because it's quite easy to get drawn into, especially when you get to, oh, there's qualifying races here, there and everywhere, and it is quite easy for it to get all on top of you and a bit overwhelming instead of enjoying it. But yeah.
So
we're definitely on the same page there. What's your favourite bit of kit?
Obviously my own, like everyone will probably say, is their bike, a Cervelo, and then I've got a Canyon TT bike, which I picked up second hand, which I feel was a great buy. So I would have originally said those, but I've recently took the plunge and bought some Nike Vaporflies, which took me literally months to take the plunge to buy, as you know, due to the cost. I was blown away by them, and I think a lot of people will be able to relate. When you, I don't know if you've got a pair or something.
Yeah.
You just put them on and it automatically, they feel like nothing you've ever had on your feet before, don't they?
Yeah.
And I just, yeah. So at the moment I would have to say those. And if I get a PB tonight at the Mid Cheshire 5K, then there will be, I'll probably put them on my mantelpiece.
What's your current PB?
It's 1604, wow. 1604, and that was at Chrisleton, but I'm hoping for 1559.
Yeah, get under that next marker.
So we'll see. And if the Vaporflies manage to do that, they're worth every penny.
Brilliant. Well, good luck. I'm sure you will. I'm sure you'll smash it. But they are a great trainer. They are really, really good.
Yeah.
And whether they're worth the money or not, who knows? Who cares? They're just a great shoe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
So your short term and your long term goals.
Well, the short term is tonight. is to get under 1555. Under 16, around that 1555. So that's a short term. If I don't hit it tonight, then that's still my sort of short term over the next couple of months, I would say. And I've sort of, the last couple of weeks, been focusing on trying to get a bit of 5K speed back in. And I've sort of eased off a little bit on the cycling. So the sort of short to mid-term will be to sort of get back on and get the power back up on the bike, and then sort of mid to long term, obviously, will be to just perform well and enjoy Romania if it goes ahead in July.
Yeah.
I am very much about the experience, although I'll have to remind myself of that the days leading up to it. to try and enjoy it, because like I said, I didn't expect to even qualify as I did. So the fact that I have, I'm over the moon with. But it'll just be to try and go get to the start line fit, and just put on a performance that I'm happy with, and ultimately get around. So yeah, that's the sort of short midterm, and then long term, I've always wanted to eventually do an Ironman. I just don't know if I'm suited to it in terms of my strengths don't tend to be big volume of training. I seem to cope well off. I can cope with sort of high intensity sessions, but volume is something that I haven't seemed to be able to adjust too well. And then it would mean also getting back in the pool and picking up swimming again. But it's something that, I don't know, I've just always had a desire to do, like I'd assume a lot of your listeners have as well, and just to sort of do it once. But if I'm going to do it once, I want to be able to go and go and try and do a time that I would be happy with. So, yeah, that I think that's probably the long term. But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's some good goals. The Romanian triathlon, it's a really good, we raced there previously, really good course.
Oh, right.
I have qualified for that myself.
Brilliant.
However, it clashed with a holiday that we'd already booked with some friends, but I haven't pulled out yet because I don't know whether the holiday is going to go ahead or not. So I'm not sure. Yeah. It's a really nice place, Romania. It's really cheap, really good food.
Yeah.
If you're in Târgu and you know the restaurants and stuff, some really nice places to eat. The course is flat and fast, out and back.
Okay.
Both the run and the bike, and it was a fantastic event. Really, really enjoyed it. So I think it's been one of my favourite, to be fair. Just go there as you said, try and get there fit and just enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's reassuring to hear you say that, because when I realised I had qualified, I was eagerly hoping for somewhere in Spain, and my wife was hoping for Ibiza. And then when we heard Romania, we were a little bit like, oh. But then you're I think the second or third person who's raced there, who said the same. It's beautiful. We've had the emails today about we've got to enter sort of our entry by 18th of May, I think. So hopefully by then we will have heard from the government whether we can travel or not. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, well, let's hope so, because it's a really nice place, really nice town, and people are really friendly, and it's unbelievably cheap, and you'll have a really good race for your first race. So yeah, so and if you need anything about the location or traveling or whatever, just give us a shout, and if I can help you.
Well, thanks, appreciate that.
No worries. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you've got other people that have been, and you can get advice off as well, but the offer's there if you need
it. Thank you
and good luck. So let's move on to your business, which is Endurance Peak. If you want to talk a little bit about that and basically what you do and how it's developed in lockdown.
I probably best giving you a bit of background, really. So I'm an exercise physiologist by trade and qualification, really. So I went to university, did sports science, did my master's in sport and exercise physiology, and then I went into lecturing at FE and HE, so further education and higher education. And then during that time, the place that I was working at developed a commercial testing lab. As obviously you need to teach the students how to use equipment, so we developed commercial testing for local athletes to come in and get tested. So I'd built up quite a lot of experience in that. We tested professional football teams, some amateur age group and some low level professional athletes as well from a variety of sports. And then when I came away from lecturing, I went a little bit more into, I became self-employed, where I then went into the commercial side, working for one of the world leading manufacturers of a lot of these testing equipment. So during that time, and then COVID hit, I'd always had this idea to want to provide my own testing facility, because I'd seen that there were various testing facilities in terms of universities where it would be sort of relatively low cost, but it was a bit hit and miss depending on who tested you. So if it was a good student who was willing to put the time in and give you some good reports, it was a good experience. But then that was not always the case. So people sort of left with reams of data and not knowing what the hell to do with it. Mm-hmm. So there's that end. And then there's the other end where I'd seen commercial testing facilities where they were charging extortionate prices and sort of pricing out a lot of amateur and age group athletes. So I wanted to, I've always had the plan to fit somewhere in the middle, provide a bit of a USP for manageable prices, but where you're getting relevant information, which is going to help you ultimately gain better performances. So when people come to me, I always say that it's not about the data that you get today, it's about what you do with it when you leave here. So that's always been my USP. So I eventually took the plunge in my house. We've got an outbuilding, which is a good size outbuilding, and we decided to convert it. And we basically, as soon as we decided to convert it, I then started to set up my Instagram page and website and Facebook and started advertising. And as soon as I advertised, I was then started to get interest coming through. And it was almost, oh my God, I haven't finished the building. And I've already got interest. So we did start testing it at the back of the kitchen when we very first started. And God knows how we managed to cope, but we did. And we had a few people coming through. And then eventually the building was finished. And we've now got a lovely little setup. We called it the Hideout, where athletes come. They can get tested for VO2 max, submaximal protocols. We do blood lactate and blood profiling, body composition, resting metabolic rate for calorie expenditure, nutritional guidance based off that. And then we also offer endurance coaching. And the coaching came as a bit of a secondary. I've always said that I'm a physiologist, and the plan was to provide testing for athletes and coaches to then implement within that. But I was finding that I was getting more and more people coming, having the test, and then wanting help to know how to structure the training effectively, and particularly multidisciplinary events where you've got to balance either two or three disciplines. People were just not knowing how many hard sessions should they do, how much of it should be easy. Oh, I've read this on the internet and it says you should be doing this many sweet spot sessions, and read something else and everyone says it should be Stephen Seiler's 80-20 approach. So from that, I decided to coach a few athletes, and then that's grown exponentially, where we've now got several athletes on our books, who from just runners to cyclists to duathletes to triathletes, ranging from sprints to full distance, and yeah, so it's not at the point where it's my full-time business yet. So I still do some consultancy work for the commercial side of the testing, where I do education and training. to use us, but it's at the point where it's good. And the key is I want to keep that quality. That's the thing. I've never set out. I want it to make me a millionaire. I set out because I saw that there's a lot of athletes who are just guessing, and some get it right and some don't, whether it be through injury or not tapping into the potential. And I've always felt that I've been able to hopefully provide something for them. So yeah, so that's endurance peak really.
Yeah. So how does physiological assessments that you offer tie into how do they help an athlete? So say somebody comes in and does a VO2 max test, how does that then relate to their training?
Yeah, good, great question, Rich. So basically it's so someone would come in, whether that be a VO2 max or VO2 max with lactate assessment. So for example, if we use VO2 max with lactate assessment, which is probably the most popular one, so a combined test, they will come in with the mask on, where we'll measure their inspired and expired gases. And then at the end of sort of 4 to 5 minutes stages, we'll take a fingertip blood sample to measure the lactate in the blood. And from that, then we can produce a metabolic profile, as they'd say, where we can then identify three main thresholds. So lactate one, or otherwise can be known as aerobic threshold, fat max threshold, easy steady zones. We've then got the second threshold, which is commonly known as the lactate threshold or maximal lactate steady state, or commonly on the bike is linked to FTP and W prime and so on. And then you've also got the VO2 max. So from those three points, we can then set about creating a athlete profile where they'll have accurate training zones is one. So training zones which provide not only heart rate but power or pace depending on the modality, and then from that as well identify some potential areas to improve on. So whether that be that they're not aerobically efficient, or their aerobic threshold could be improved because it correlates obviously over to a lot of race paces. And they've got maybe untapped potential there, or if they're looking at the shorter end, that the VO2 max, and it could potentially do better with some VO2 max interval work to push that maximal consumption at the top end. And so really it's about, one, giving them structure to the training. So ultimately a lot of people will go out the door and they'll just do whatever they feel like. And a lot of amateur athletes put themselves in this narrow sort of range within the middle because it gives them an endorphin rush because they've worked quite hard, but they haven't really worked hard enough, but they're in this sort of low level fatigue. And so really it's to, one, give them a little bit of structure. So one, they're developing these different domains. So doing some high volume, low intensity, which improves their fat utilization, and their aerobic efficiency, to then doing a little bit in their race pace area and then doing a tiny little bit at that top end just to increase that ceiling. So that's the main aims of what we aim to achieve from doing the testing.
So it seems actually very similar to, I know you mentioned their heart rate, but very similar to FTP on the bike, but even more specific and more accurate to each individual person.
Yeah, a lot of research shows that FTP overestimates by a few watts to quite a large amount of watts, depending on how conditioned the person is on the bike. And that's mainly because of the protocol. It's 20 minutes. The FTP, functional threshold power, is it basically is it was designed to to be a more practical assessment to estimate what you could sustain for 50 minutes to 60 minutes of intensity. So by cutting it down to 20 minutes, although you divide, obviously times it by 0.95, it does seem to overshoot because it favours the more anaerobically conditioned athlete. So by doing the lactate threshold, yeah, you're getting the actual correct number rather than estimating it off the FTP. And like I said, it normally we find that FTP overestimates by at least 10 watts. Yeah. I had someone in this morning, funnily enough, and it overestimated by 10 to 15 watts. So it gives, and then plus that, it gives them the accurate heart rate to go away with for what they can hold for that duration as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a question then. Now it's totally gone on me. Oh yeah, that was it. So how often do you have to do these tests then?
Yeah, so it all depends on the level of athlete, the commitment of the athlete, how sort of tuned in they are to their own training as well. So if we took a top level athlete, if you look at the Norwegians, Gustav Iden, Christian Blumenfeld, and that setup in Norway, they're getting tested every 4 to 6 weeks apparently.
All right.
But then you've got other top end athletes who are getting tested once a year. So generally, what I say to, I don't try and pigeonhole everyone and say you should get tested every 6 to 8 weeks, which would be great for me. I normally say, come in for a test, here's your results. And then what I like to do is give them some strategies to go and work on and improve on. And depending on how much time they've got to commit to that, will then depend on when they should come back in. And generally, you find that sort of 12 weeks is a good number. So 3 months where they're able to go away, put in some decent training in, and then come back in and get tested. But like I said, I've got other athletes who will come religiously every year, because when I was doing it at the old university as well, they've been training for years. They pretty much know the training in and out. They know how they respond, and they come in, they get tested at the start of the season, and they just want to see if their zones have moved or changed. And then they go away and they adjust the training according to their zones. And that perfectly for them too.
How has lockdown affected you? I know you've only just started on your own. Have you been able to develop anything that people can carry out online to help you, your business, and also help people that are not within your area? Because obviously you're in one part of the country, and if people get on your website and like what you're doing, they've got to travel. So is there anything you've developed or are looking to develop?
It's a really good point. It's been challenging for everyone, as we all know. And when we first started out and lockdown hit, we'd only been sort of testing and sort of getting people coached on our coaching books for, I think it was about 3 or 4 months, and had built up a steady sort of stream of people we were testing. And then we'd started to recruit a few people who wanted coaching. And as soon as it hit, I knew that the testing would have to be sidelined because it's non-essential.
Yeah,
and that was fine. It gave us a chance to finish off the lab itself and sort out my website and sort out a few things which had had to be put on the back burner a little bit. But I really thought that the coaching would plummet. I thought that people would rein the belts in and say, okay, I can't. It's a luxury I can't afford. Mm. And it hit the back of people, and it was the actual opposite. I recruited more during the lockdown than I probably have since we've come out of this second lockdown.
Right.
Or third lockdown. And as it turns out, I think it was people just needing something to do whilst they were stuck at home. And I think it was just, it sort of favored them. They had structure. It gave them something to focus on. It gave them a release. So I don't think I lost any during lockdown, and I recruited a handful, which was really positive considering there were literally no races to sort of aim, and no sight of when they were going to return. Mm. And then from that, obviously all of my coaching goes via Training Peaks anyway. Yeah. So that worked perfectly, and it basically secured the reason why we do it through Training Peaks. Because I had a few that started off, and they all, when they started off, not all, but some were on the old school Excel and paper, and they liked it. So when I transferred over to Training Peaks and streamlined everything, I had a few that would be like, I like the old way. But then obviously lockdown, when you can't meet face to face and all of that, and then now the Training Peaks syncs everything to Zwift or to your Garmin. They absolutely love it. So yeah, they're happy. It's a bit really happy with it. So that's how we manage it, or how we did manage it during lockdown. Obviously, the testing, there was nothing we could do. We did field tests, like you mentioned. We did some FTP assessments. We did some sort of 20-minute to 30-minute run protocol time trial stuff, just to sort of have a check on heart rates. And then we did some like 5K time trial running, just to sort of keep a little bit of competition within the group. Mm. But yeah, the testing unfortunately had to be put on hold. There wasn't a lot we could do about that one.
Fantastic. Right, well, I think that's a great place to leave it, because I know you're tight on time. Unless you've got anything that you'd like to add, Stuart, it's been great to meet you and hear your story.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's been really good. Great first experience. Be hopefully see you in Romania, and we can have a pint.
And if you want to give a plug to your business now.
Yeah, so it's endurancepeak.co.uk. That's the best place. That's got all the information about the testing, what it entails. It's got all the coaching and what's involved with that. And it's also got a contact form and phone number and an email as well. And any inquiries that go on to there come directly through to me anyway. So it'll be me who gets in touch. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Right. Well, good luck with your run tonight. Smash it.
Yeah.
And enjoy those Nikes.
Yeah. Cheers.
And post on Instagram. Brilliant. How you get on tonight, so we know. Or give us a message how you get on.
Yeah, will do.
All right.
Yeah, man. Will do.
All right. Nice to meet you. Take care.
Cheers.
See you, man.
And you. Yeah, and you. Good luck. Keep it up.
Yeah. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye. Great to hear Stuart's story. And if you want to get in touch with him, you can find him on Instagram at Endurance Peak. And as he said on his website, if you want any physiological testing done, lactate thresholds, RMR, VO2 max, he's the man to get in touch with. So, yeah. Give him a shout out and say hello on Instagram. And that's about it for this episode. Thank you ever so much for listening. Much appreciated. And if you want to give us a review, head over to Apple Podcast and leave us a comment and like us and leave us a review. That'd be great. That helps us get our profile risen, and then we can reach out to more people. So that all helps. If you want to get in touch, you can send us an email at agegroupmultisportpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at amp_1967, on Facebook at ampgb. You can head across to our website at agegroupmultisportpodcast.buzzsprout.com, and you can find us on Twitter at agegroupmultisportpodcast. We've also got our YouTube channel up and running, and we're under AmpGB. Give us a shout out, and we'll see you next time. And don't forget, stay safe, keep training, and love the process.